You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.
And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host, Aaron Varola.
Yo, what's up, folks? Welcome to episode 140 of the Fanboy Garage. It is good to be back. We are 3 years old, so we had to drop an episode for you guys. Come back strong. There is lots to talk about. We're going to get into Army of the Dead, lots of reactions there. We'll talk a little bit about the Eternals trailer and how different it is from pretty much everything else that's Marvel out there. And yeah, we'll dig into some of the news and announcements that were shared about the return of Batman the Animated Series as well as Superman. But let's start with Army of the Dead. Yeah, what a movie.
So Army of the Dead debuted on Netflix officially last week, and I saw it, and I enjoyed it. I'm not usually somebody that is like it's hung up on like run times and stuff like that, because I feel like the runtime of a movie is just essentially it's dependent on how interested the person was, or how that person felt watching it. This one, I felt like, you know, they could have probably trimmed some stuff out, but
a little long in the tooth.
It is, but at the same time, we got a lot of character work, so we got to spend time with these characters, which added a nice element to the story. You know, it starts out just on an incredible high. You know, I feel like that opening credit sequence was unbelievable, and
that was an awesome sequence.
It's fantastic. That's like the best of Zack Snyder. You know, like that's like a lot of his things, right? The pop music, the slow-mo and all that stuff, like it's all in there, but it's like it's perfect in that moment. Even just even the opening before that, like where you're introduced to the zombie and all that stuff, and the zombie escapes and whatever. That was cool too. Like then it kind of slows down.
Oh, it slowed down hard.
Yeah, but you know, you're introduced to the characters, you're starting to get a general concept of the story, where the movie's going. Because at the end of the day, like this movie is a zombie movie, but it's also a heist movie, right? So there's this big plot that the zombies are sort of the backdrop for a while anyway.
Right.
So, you know, they really spend a lot of time establishing the heist and putting the team together and giving you a little bit of, you know, their backstory. Well, some cases, a lot of their backstory, a little bit of backstory, some motivations, all good stuff, because again, it's not something that you usually get in these types of movies. And then, you know, it does eventually pick up. There's some really good action. Some great zombie stuff. One of the things I really liked about it was the incorporating like the alpha zombies.
Yeah.
You know, like because that added an element to this where it's like, you know, we've seen there's so many zombie movies, right? And you get The Walking Dead and all that stuff. So we've seen pretty much every trope, right, you can have. And this movie does fall back on some of those. But that was a nice little element there, because it gives you like a real villain, you know, because zombies as villains, like this movie isn't really like, it's more of like an action horror movie. Like it's more action really in some cases. I mean, unless you're just like completely scared by like blood and gore and stuff like that, it's really more action than it is like horror, like as opposed to like a Night of the Living Dead, right? Which is horror. Right. So I think we're past that point now. And what I, you know, there's different types of zombies too, which is cool. You know, like they have different characteristics and stuff. So I liked a lot of that. I liked having like a real villain Well, I guess technically there's bad people, right? But there's like, as far as the zombies go, it's nice to have like a villain. It kind of reminded me of, in a way, of what they did in Star Trek First Contact, right? Where mm-hmm. you have the Borg as your primary villain, but the Borg are just like a hive mind consciousness, right? They're just like these, essentially right. like they're zombies in space, right? So at least as they had been portrayed at that point, and they created the character of the Borg Queen for Star Trek First Contact. And when they asked, like, the, you know, at the time, like, well, why did you create that character and kind of sort of mess around with a little bit of the history and the story of the Borg as we had known them to that point? They said, well, because without that character, we realized we would have just had zombies in space. Right. And that's kind of like what I feel like here. So with this, you got that little added extra element to it.
And they cast that creepy mom from Sleepwalkers.
Yes. Oh, for the Borg Queen. Yeah.
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 Her eyes, man. That woman creeps me out.
Yes. I actually saw Sleepwalkers in the theater.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's a messed up movie.
Yeah.
So I'm fresh. I just watched it last night. Nobody does those intro sequences better than Zack Snyder.
Yeah.
You know, it's like The Watchmen.
Yep.
That stuff too. It was awesome. It's like how he does what was it? The Bruce Wayne thing, right? He did that in BVS too.
The opening, yeah, the Crime Alley thing.
Yeah, Crime Alley mm-hmm. thing. it's funny. It was one of those movies where the first 5 minutes I was like, oh my god, this is holy shit, yeah. This is awesome. And then when it slowed down, I got real. I mean, it was late for me too, but I got bored. Not because I didn't care about the characters, and like, I appreciate that, right? It was probably because I was expecting, like, we don't need to know about these characters. Like, I didn't expect anyone to live. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like, yeah, let's just jump into the action, because that's kind of like what I expected it to be.
Right.
But I did appreciate, you know, the development of the, well, Batista's character is what's his name, Scott.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that was interesting. You know, the stuff with the daughter was fine,
and it does tie in to the end. Yeah, you know, so they kind of bring that back at least. You know.
Yeah, I think the thing I got caught up on was like towards the end, like wait, like how did the alphas come to be? You know what I mean?
Yes, and you were gonna find that out, right?
I hope so, yeah.
Because they're doing like a animated prequel thing, and they're doing an actual movie prequel and stuff like that. So
yeah, so like that's cool, you know. But I was like, damn, you know. And which alpha is this one? Is this? Because he had like dog tags. I'm like, is that the original mm-hmm. alpha?
Yeah.
Guy, or is that the one of the soldiers?
Yeah.
You know that got bit. But you know, like my mind got kind of stuck on that, and then the whole thing about the pregnancy stuff, and then the other weird part to me, and maybe this was, and it's probably pointless, but I got stuck on it. It was towards the end of the movie where they're like shooting their heads, and then they're like blue sparks, like blasting off, and I'm like, is that because they're sentient zombies, or are they robots? Like for a second, I thought I was watching something different, because I'm like. Are these robot? Anyways, sidetracked this whole thing. But, anyways, the action sequences were great. Mm-hmm. I loved actually all of the characters. I thought the like Latina with the headband was so on the nose aliens for me.
Yes,
and it, probably because she meant to be like yes. You know, badass chick, like I don't give it, you know, whatever. But yo, that German dude crushed it.
Yeah, he's
to me, he's stole fantastic. The show.
And he's gonna be the star, his character is gonna be the star of the prequel movie that they're making, which is gonna be essentially, I guess, how he got into the heist and stuff like that, like right around the time, I guess, of the outbreak or something like that. So, okay. Yeah. So clearly they detected the same thing. They must have detected the same thing while they were making the movie. That you'd like that. Well, this is working. This character's great. Like, this is where we need to go.
Too much of a good thing.
Yeah, well, maybe, but
you know,
who knows?
I mean, the Batista's story, the Scott story, is interesting.
Yeah,
to me, and I like the fact that they used the the slow motion flashback sequence, and kind of sped through time a little bit, because I didn't know exactly where this thing took place, and I didn't know, you know, because I think for me. When I watch some of these movies, it's like, oh, you know, it's the zombie apocalypse. So, like, basically the world is over. It's been overrun by zombies. Yeah. But, of course, we're going to be resilient and we're going to, like, find life in this sort of craziness. And I thought that was interesting. And I think the character that I was sort of super, super intrigued of, and we didn't get jack shit about this person, was the mother in the opening sequence that, like, is looking for her daughter, finds her daughter, and then at the end when they're making the wall around the city, mm-hmm. gets squashed by the freak. I was like, holy – I was like, wait, we're not getting anything on her?
Yeah.
Shit. So – and that's probably the parent in me, but – and whatever. But, you know, I thought, hey, for what it is, for it being a zombie film, which we've seen many, many of – I thought it was well done. Yep. I like the fact that they used, like, real actors, if this makes any sense, like, as the zombies versus a World War Z type film where it's, like, a bunch of gummy people mm-hmm. running around.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool. And it kind of reminded me a little bit of 28 Days Later, where there's actually, like, you know, there's a lot of unpredictability in these zombie creatures, and I agree. I think the idea of the alphas and being able to add some sophistication to them,
yeah,
just adds some extra dimension to the story. I mean, the fact that he like has a metal helmet, knowing that he's like, oh yeah, you're shooting ahead. No, I think not. That's like dope. He was really smart, he would have armed the rest of his people with.
Yeah, well. Yeah, but I think that, I liked that element. I liked the fact and I liked the fact that the zombies kind of had personality and had different characteristics because it makes sense.
Oh, is that a zombie with a cape?
Right, yeah.
Bizarro Superman.
It's, obviously if you you could start picking apart anything, right, if you have to, but like, yeah, I mean, do I think that they probably could have given us a little, I too actually did think we were going to get a little bit at some point on like the backstory of the alphas and like how they probably actually could have replaced the entire like Theo Rossi storyline with that, because at the end of the day, like that Theo Rossi storyline doesn't go anywhere. Like it essentially just exists for him to be like a human bad guy. Yeah, just like a human bad guy that we root to see die.
Yeah, I'm glad they wiped it up fast with him, and then of course he gets shot and then they take him.
But he really had no point. Like, I mean, no. Other than he was I guess technically he was like the vehicle that got us into their lair or whatever, so we could see that side of it. But like they could have figured
hierarchy of it all.
Yeah, they could have figured out a different way to do that.
I mean, if I were Theo Rossi, and dude, if you're listening, which I know you're not, but I'm gonna say this anyways, like you need to pick better parts for yourself, man. Like since Sons of Anarchy, like your role in Luke Cage was ballsack, and your role in this is ballsack. You just try to play a tough guy, and I don't buy it from him at all. Like he looks like this small little dude. Like you just like karate, like judo chop him in the throat and just watch him choke.
Like, yeah.
He doesn't seem like a tough guy to me at all. But yeah, I mean, the fact that he's like this rape, you know, he's like a raper.
But just,
I'm glad that they dispatched him fast. But then they dropped that on us. Oh yeah, you're gonna see you raping all these girls, bah, you're a bad guy. We're like, we didn't even have to know all of that, but
yeah.
Yeah, let them take them.
And it ultimately goes, it didn't really matter.
It's pointless.
Yeah.
He dies so fast anyways.
Yeah, and it just like, yeah, it, you know. But anyway, yeah. But yeah, I mean, but overall, I think good job.
Yeah.
You know, it's, again, there have been so many zombie movies, and, you know, there's been a lot of zombie stories and stuff like that that we've seen. So it's nice when you have one that can kind of stand out. I mean, that's one of the things that happened, like, with the George Romero movies, as they got long in the tooth, was like they just were more of the same, right? It was just like, yeah, they changed the setting, and it just kind of lost me for a while. And I mean, it really hasn't been, I mean, Train to Busan, which is unbelievable, probably one of the best zombie movies ever, that kind of, because I'm not a Walking Dead fan. Like, I watched the first few seasons of it, because I thought that first season, that short season, is one of the best seasons of television that I've ever seen. And then it just kind of fell off the cliff as Frank Darabont was removed, you know, from the show. It just, I just lost, it kept losing my interest more and more. So I have not been a big Walking Dead fan. So for me, like, Train to Busan is really the best zombie thing that I've seen in years. And this is not that, but this is, this was good. The thing that surprised me a little bit was the fact that I, based on the marketing, you know, both the trailers and the TV spots and even the posters and all that, I thought this was going to end that opening sequence. Like, I thought this was going to be a little bit more, fun maybe isn't the right word, but like,
no, like Crank, this, like that Jason Statham movie Crank.
Yeah. I don't know zombies. That I don't know that I expected quite that, but yeah, sort of a, like this, I didn't think this would take itself. This is like kind of a serious movie in that sense. Like, it takes like itself end, seriously
at the end. Like it, like when he's saying goodbye,
right?
All of that. I was like, oh wow, we're having like a quick little Logan moment here. And yo, I mean, I totally thought, yo, he's going to become the alpha, like the new alpha. And like his intellect will be sort of intact, but then he just turns full on.
Yeah.
You know, full on, I'm going to eat my daughter now, or, you know, whereas like, you know, I don't know. I thought it was.
Yeah. I mean, they did the, that kind of was the. Similar to the Night of the Living Dead remake, the 1990 remake, and also sort of to a point, the original Dawn of the Dead. There are those moments like where a popular character dies and or not dies, but gets, either dies or gets bitten, is about to die, and you know, like, they're eventually going to turn, so you're just kind of waiting for it, and then someone that cares about them has to kind of put them down.
The
I mean, we've seen that in a bunch of these. So
since so many different, I mean, you want to talk about creepy? Like, there's a Walking Dead moment where Carol has to kill like a little girl.
Yes, I've seen that.
You saw that when she adopted the little girl and she was going nuts and doing all types of crazy stuff and like killed her sister and.
I mean, that started back in the original Night of the Living Dead, having that to kill like, the kid.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
I mean,
dark, but
yeah.
And then I don't even know the dude's. I know it's Omari Harrington or Harding or whatever his last name is. Ghost. I love that part too, where he's like on the plane, like living it up, and then all of a sudden he's like, oh shit, I'm bitten, and he starts laughing.
Well, and
in Mexico City.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest cities. And
so that obviously sets up a sequel if they want, you know, if they want to go that route. You know, I don't know that we need it, only because not because I didn't enjoy this movie, just because it's like, after a while, it's like, I think they did a really good job of setting up story and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I think then it gets, anytime you have a movie like this, it does just become a little redundant and, you know, too much going on. So,
Would you wish you saw this movie in the theaters?
I didn't this didn't bother me. Like, I was fine watching this at home.
Yeah.
Like, my immediate reaction wasn't... I've never seen... I'm trying to think. I don't think I've ever seen, like, a zombie movie in theaters, to be honest with you.
I saw Dawn of the Dead.
Obviously, the Snyder.
Yeah, the Snyder cut.
Yeah, it's not... Yeah, it's not... yeah, I mean, I didn't... This is not a movie that I think I... like, had normal times existed in this movie, like, had been released just in theaters. Like, I don't know that I would have been interested in it, and I would have wanted to see it, and I would have seen it eventually, but I probably wouldn't have gone to the theater to see it.
Yeah.
I don't think.
I'm kind of glad. I you know, not to critique stuff, but, like, sometimes CGI stuff. I don't know if it's because it's in it's on my TV.
I didn't really notice anything that stood out to me.
Some of it just kind of threw me off. I was like, I'm glad I'm out. Like, it was specifically the scene, like, in the helicopter. I'm like, I'm kind of glad I'm not watching this right now in the theater.
The helicopter, which was an homage to Dawn of the Dead as well, which was kind of cool. I didn't have that moment. That, man, I wish I would have seen it in theaters moment. So, nope. Yeah.
Me neither. Cool. So we'll see what's next for Zack Snyder.
Yeah, I mean, because this thing has been in development for a while, so I'm surprised we actually haven't heard something yet as far as, like, what he's going to be working on next, because you would think he would be working, but, you know, listen, take your time, do what you got to do. He did work on the back-to-back, right, kind of the Snyder cut of this Justice League and then this, so it's a lot. It's a lot of hours of movie. To have to put together,
almost seven hours
a movie.
It's kind of interesting because all of the controversy that and the divisiveness that surrounds him as a filmmaker, that baggage kind of carried over for me.
How so?
So much energy and time has been spent. Trying to understand his vision for Justice League and these superheroes that, like, I totally forgot, like, who he actually is as a filmmaker, right? Like, what is it that, like, gets him excited about stuff? Like, what, you know, what other things can he do?
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
I mean,
like,
think about that. We spent, like, 6 years.
Well, right, and that's why...
Between BVS... and Justice League, and then now this is a completely different thing. We spent way too much time with him in this one pocket.
Yes.
That, like, the first, you know, 30 minutes of this, I was like, oh my God, like, I can't, I'm trying, you know, I'm like, oh, here comes the close zoom in, all the slow motion. You know what I mean? Like, I was kind of like, oh no, I got to break this.
Right. And you know, it's funny because, I mean, Zack Snyder is not the first, last or only director in the world to have a definitive style. I mean, a lot of the great directors of all time have that, right? They have their things, camera shots, even just casting, right?
Lens flares.
So, yeah, I mean, you have there, they have that thing. I mean, everyone has their style, right? Dating back to, I mean, Orson Welles had it, Hitchcock had it. I mean, you know, the greats have it. Scorsese has his things, right, that he does. You know, Spielberg has, I mean, he's been diverse, but he kind of has a style, you know, so it's like everybody has that thing. So it's like, but yeah, we've super analyzed Zack Snyder based on essentially one film for, what is it now, 5 years?
Yeah.
And because you can't, I mean, I know Justice League, but he didn't, I know his name is on the theatrical cut of Justice League, but that's not his movie, right? So it's really just BVS and the decisions that he made in BVS. And it really is more literally about those decisions, right? Not so much about his directing technique. Mm-hmm. But that we've just analyzed it so much or talked about it so much or debated about it so much. And it's become like, if you go on social media, you get this whole, like, you're either with him or against him type of thing. And it's not the end of the day. I mean, this guy's a director. Right. He's a filmmaker. And so if you're somebody that loves film, like, you have to step back sometimes and remember, like, hey, wait, not only do I love film and do I like talking about directing and acting and all that stuff, but, like, this is a guy whose movies I have mostly enjoyed. Like, yeah, there are, yeah, again, like, there's only one Zack Snyder movie that I have not seen, and that is Sucker Punch.
Same, bro. We are in the same boat.
Yeah, and there's only...
There's nothing... Wait. What about that Owl movie?
I've seen the Owl movie.
Oh, shit. Which,
so yeah, and it's good. The thing that the only movie that he's directed that I don't... Now, I'm not going to count theatrical Justice League, because, again, yes, I know technically he's the director of record. He's on it, but he didn't direct that movie, at least the finished version that we saw in the theater. So the only movie that he actually directed that I have not liked is BVS. Mm-hmm. Okay? And so, like, the idea that... And it just... I'm not probably ever going to agree on all the way he looks at superheroes and stuff like that. It's just, it's a philosophical difference. That's fine. But this is a director that I enjoy. This is a director whose movies I like. You know, and this is a director that, like, is not one of these guys that he's a guy that I will want to watch his movies, assuming I'm interested in the subject matter, of course. So great. And it's just very easy to forget that.
Yeah,
because we have just, it's been BVS, 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 Justice League all this time. And, like, this guy has a catalog now. You know, he's got a lot of films now that he's made. Mm-hmm. And not Justice League and BVS are not the only comic book movies that he's made. They weren't even the first comic book movies that he's made. This guy has made good movies based on comic books / graphic novels, whatever, in the past. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, and I will defend Watchmen. I'm one of those people that, like, you know, like, yeah, I don't defend it to the point of, like, what happened with BBS and all of that stuff, right? But, like, I've defended Watchmen many times, to people. Same. You know, and especially people who are, like, hardcores when it comes to that book and all of that stuff. And you know, as much as I loved the HBO series and what they were able to do with the subject matter, like, Zack Snyder's Watchmen, the movie itself is, to me, I mean, that's, you know, anyway, it's a faithful adaptation. I know he changed the ending, but he should have, because in the same breath,
like, we also have to remember, like, there was not a lot of that kind of comic booky, like,
no,
you know, dropping squids out of the sky type stuff.
No, I mean, you could do it now, right? You could do it now. You couldn't do it then.
This is why the Watchmen TV series was successful.
Yeah, and it also is the type of story that it is, you know. And that's the thing, like, with Watchmen. Like, I can remember friends of mine, or even, like, coworkers and stuff, who aren't, they didn't know what Watchmen was, right? So when they saw the trailer for it, you know, before whatever movie they were seeing, they were like, "Oh, I want to see that Watchmen movie. It looks like X-Men."
Yeah,
you know, because,
like, oh shit,
and it's like, yeah, no, I mean, unless expectations. Yeah, it's like, unless they went in a very different direction, it's not gonna be X-Men.
It fooled a lot of people too. I remember my wife thinking the same thing.
Yeah, well, you would think, because, again, that was also what people knew of superheroes in the movies at that time too. You know, and comic books, and there's this whole world of comic books that exists out there that are not just, it's not Marvel, DC, Superman, Batman, like, superheroes and stuff. It's this other stuff, you know, 300, you know, Watchmen, you know, that type of stuff that, you know, even stuff that wasn't successful, like V for Vendetta, things like that. That,
love that movie.
Well, yeah. You love the movie, you said?
I love that movie.
Oh, boy. Don't let Alan Moore hear you say that.
Whatever. he didn't like Watchmen.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't. He's anti-Hollywood and all that stuff. Anyway, like, he's a curmudgeon. But anyway, yeah. So, yes, I get it. It is funny that I do think eventually we will. I mean, I am now. I think separating from social media helps. Mm-hmm. Not hearing that constant back and forth and that constant conversation, and we're still debating, you know, 5-year-old movies and going back and forth and Justice League and Snyder Cut. Like, this is a director that is more than that, right? He's more than Justice League. He's more than BVS. He's got a catalog. He'll continue to make films, and hopefully quality films. And, you know, if you're going to go into every Zack Snyder movie with that mentality of, like, oh my God, like, here's this, this is what he does, and this is this thing, and this is that thing, and this is what he's, you know, forget it. Like, I'm not doing that. I just want to be entertained, you know, by my movies.
Yeah.
Call me crazy.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, if Michael Bay can last this long.
Well, that's a whole, Michael Bay is a, I mean, listen, that's not even, they're not even on the same planet as far as, like, quality.
Yeah.
I mean, Michael Bay is, yeah, that's just, he's a disaster. But, I mean, look, I know he, his movies make money, but that's okay. I mean,
yeah,
doesn't necessarily equate to anything. But,
nope.
Yeah. So, cool. Speaking of, movies that make money, I just thought before we get into the other J.J. Abrams piece here, I got a kick out of it today because I saw that J.J. Abrams came out with the profound statement that, you know, maybe it is a good idea to have a plan when you're going to make a Star Wars trilogy.
I am. And every other comment on social media is like, you think? I mean. Duh. I don't understand how you can, how a studio can say we're going to make three new Star Wars films and we're going to introduce these new characters and they are going to be the central characters for these stories, that nobody was like, hey, we should all sit together and figure out what these three movies are going to be like so we can tell a cohesive arc.
Yeah. I think it's cute that J.J. Abrams apparently thought, and I didn't see any more to that story other than just that quote, so I don't know what else he said or how he said it or whatever, but I think it's cute that J.J. Abrams apparently believed that, you know, somehow he was going to direct the first movie and then based on the original quote unquote plan, right? As far as the directors, right? It was going to be J.J. Abrams. And then originally, right, Rian Johnson making the last two. And then then they said, well, no, then Colin Trevorrow is going to do the third one.
Right.
So he thought that they were going to say, okay, J.J. kick it off. And then somehow, like, they were going to just hand the baton to the next person without any plan, and that they were somehow going to tell a cohesive story, and then the next person would take that baton, and then they would just, like, they thought, like, they were telling, like, they thought it was gonna be like story time, like, I'm gonna pass it down to you and you'll continue, right? It and then you're gonna that's cute, like, with Star Wars, that they thought that that was actually, that idealistic mentality was gonna work, rather than just say, here's our outline, here's our plan, get us to here. Like, by the end of the first movie, we want to be here. By the end of the second movie, we want to be here. Right. By the end of the third movie, we want to be here. Now you guys get us there. Like, that's what, you know, it's that simple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't even with it. I can't.
That's,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Look, if they were thinking, you know, that... No, this is not what – actually, I'm going to stop myself because that's absolutely not what they're thinking. Look, George Lucas is the writer for the three Star Wars films. Well, six Star Wars films, mm-hmm. Right?
Yes.
He directed the
– And three, the creator the overarching story too. Is
what, right. I mean, yeah. Even though he was making it up as he went along, right? Like, there's no way he thought, oh, this is going to be an epic story. He was like, sure. Hey, shit, I just like –
Obviously.
Knocked it out of the park. And I'm going to write another one.
Sure. And we've said it before. I mean, based on things that happen in A New Hope.
Right.
And the way that things end up in Return of the Jedi, clearly there was not a, they may have had a general concept of how it was going to go, but there were a lot of things they were making up on the fly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, you can't, in this day and age, I don't think you can have that spirit. Thinking like, oh, no, we're just gonna, it's gonna be a franchise that, you know, it's just gonna live on and we're gonna just make it what each director thinks it is. Like, no.
Yeah. No. I mean, that's, you
can't do that.
Yeah, see, I think the problem is nothing wrong with having, I mean, obviously the original trilogy has different directors, right?
Mm-hmm.
For the three movies, but same writer.
The story is
the, yes. Yeah, and exactly. And the prequel trilogy, I think, could have benefited from having different directors as well. because that was just too much of like Lucas, what he wanted it to be, right? Without that extra, like, you know, that's just that extra set of eyes to say, hey, maybe we go this way. Maybe we should do that like this, right? So there's nothing wrong with doing that, but you have to have, you can't have three different people, right? Well, it turned out to be two people technically, but like you can't have three different like writers or three different sets of writers, you know, different directors, different this, that. Like you can't have that. Like you have to be able to map the thing out.
Yeah. And then Terrio did Star Wars, right?
Who?
Chris Terrio.
He did Rise of Skywalker. I don't know. Did he do? I think Rian Johnson wrote The Last Jedi too, right? Himself.
Yeah, he wrote The Last Jedi, and directed it. JJ and Lawrence Kasdan wrote The Force Awakens.
Right.
JJ, Chris Terrio, Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah.
And Chris Terrio, in my mind, even though it was Oscar award winning for Argo and all that goodness. Dude, you suck. Sorry. Oh my god, that movie's so bad. The more time. I'm sorry. Okay, we're gonna stop. We're gonna stop because I just can't. I can't.
So
I
can't
take the Rise of Skywalker.
I know, but you know, it could have been better if they had a plan.
Yes.
So it's good that they've at least admitted that. Yeah, it's funny. It's funny, you know, when you talk about Chris Terrio. Because, you know who Akiva Goldsman is?
Yep.
He has, like, one of those, like, fascinating filmographies, too. For those of you who don't know, Akiva Goldsman's he's a writer-director, but he was mostly known as a writer. And, you know, he's been involved with a lot of different properties. But, like, he won an Oscar for Best Adapted Screenplay, right? And I think a Golden Globe, too, maybe, for A Beautiful Mind, right?
Yep.
Which wound up winning Best Picture. But he also wrote Batman and Robin. You know, he wrote Batman Forever. He wrote I, Robot. He wrote I Am Legend. Like, he's got, like, this... So just because somebody wins an Oscar for a movie doesn't necessarily mean that everything that they do is going to rock the house. You know what I mean?
It's like the same thing with the actors.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
People win Oscars and then they go off to do
sometimes it's just out of necessity. Like, you got to eat, right? So it's like, all right, you want me to write? Yeah. All right, that's fine. I'll write this. Whatever. You know?
Cool. But I'm high as hell. I'll write that Batman story for you. It's cool.
Absolutely. Well, and speaking of Batman and J.J. Abrams, so the good news, though, that we got, at least I hope it's going to be good news. The news is good. I hope it turns out good. Is that we're going to start to see now the best of HBO Max and like the whole Warner Media thing and that synergy, because they announced that J.J. Abrams, Matt Reeves, and the amazing Bruce Timm are going to be collaborating on a new Batman animated series titled Batman the Caped Crusader that is going to be on HBO Max. It's going to be they say like kind of a retelling, like a reimagining of kind of Batman in his universe, and some of the villain stuff, which that's fine. Nothing wrong with that. And it looks like it's just going to be like gothic and dark. But I mean, they had me at like Bruce Timm. Bruce Timm, Matt Reeves, and J.J. Abrams getting together. That's like a powerhouse trio there. I almost like lost my mind when I heard that news. Like, that's probably the thing I'm most excited about in that's coming out in like the next whatever, like 5 years. Batman the Animated Series is like one of my favorite things of all time. It's still the best Batman anything that's ever been made. It's just, and for those of you who don't know, Bruce Timm was his baby. It's going to be incredible. And then there's also going to be a new Superman animated series too, right? It's My Adventures with Superman, which is going to be more like family friendly.
It sounds like an anime style.
Nothing wrong with that, right?
Yeah.
So they're kind of expanding that out. We're starting to see, at least now, it's nice that, you know, there was this time when studios felt like if they had a character that was going to be like in a live action movie, they needed to avoid having that character in a live action television series or even in like an animated series, unless the animated series was going to align directly with the movie. Like, it's what happened with the Spectacular Spider-Man, something I'm still bitter about to this day. So Spectacular Spider-Man was an amazing no pun intended, animated series that Sony did. It was on for two seasons. It was probably the best Spider-Man animated series ever. And they canceled it because at that point they, that's, I believe right around that time is they decided they wanted Spider-Man now to align more with the Avengers to take advantage of the success of the MCU. And I guess, I don't remember if it was like, if that's when they agreed to have Spider-Man be part of the MCU or not. But like they canceled it and they came back with the Ultimate Spider-Man series, which where he was like trying to become an Avenger and all of that stuff. So it aligned with the other like MCU related animated series that they had going on at the time. And anyway, so it's nice to see that now, like studios, at least in this case, they're like, hey, whatever. Like if it's great, go for it. Like, you can have a Batman animated series. We'll have, even though Matt Reeves is involved in it, clearly it's not going to be like a direct adaptation of anything that's going on in the movie. So it's like, hey, go for it. So you're going to have Batman in movies. You're going to have an animated series. You're going to have, you got Superman on television now, right? In live action, you're going to have a Superman animated series. Hopefully we'll have, well, we're going to have at least one version of Superman in the movies for now, right? So, I mean, it's nice that they've gotten out of that mindset of like, hey, why would you limit this, these IPOs, like these great properties that you have? Like, why would you just like hold them back purposely? People aren't confused anymore. I think we're sophisticated enough. You wouldn't necessarily know it all the time, but we are sophisticated enough at this point, I think, where we can understand that the audience that's going to be watching the Batman animated series is probably going to be a little different. You know, I mean, there'll be crossover, but like that's going to be for like your more hardcore fans. You know, and the people watching the movies are going to watch the movie, and like nobody's going to be confused.
Right.
I mean, I think we need to get past that. Yeah, I mean, it's like what they did
with The Flash, finally, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, hey, man, more of a good thing, as I said differently the other time, more of a good thing is fine. And it's different, it's, you know, for a different palette, too.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, like, it's different palette, different audiences, different things, Why not expand that?
Like, it'll be, it's like a great introduction for some kids who's like, you know, they started watching The Flash. They've kind of aged out of it, and now they're looking for a movie. And hey, there it is, one of my favorite characters from the TV show. Like, I get it.
Yeah. Cool. I mean, you got to start thinking like that. I mean, look, we've mentioned it a lot. I mean, look, there's a generation now that grew up on these Marvel films that, like, that's how they were introduced to these characters. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember who it was. I heard people talking the other day. Oh, actually, I remember. It was, of all things, it was on a sports show. Like a baseball show that I was watching, and they did like a Q&A segment, and one of the questions was like, you know, who's your favorite Marvel character? And to make a long story short, the one person on the panel who actually was like really into comics was like, who was your least favorite Marvel character was the thing. And he said Iron Man. And the reasoning was, well, I grew up, when I was growing up, like reading the comics, like nobody cared about Iron Man. He's like, now, obviously, like, yes, Iron Man is like the big A-lister and all of that stuff. But like, he's like, when I was growing up, like, and that's exactly the case. But now you have a generation. This is how they were introduced to these characters. Right. They may never read a comic book, but to them, this is their characters. And so it's like, take every avenue you can to introduce different audiences to these characters. And then that will be their version of the character. You know, like my gateway to Batman was the Batman 66 reruns. Yep. Obviously, that's not the endearing, lasting version of Batman, definitive version of Batman in my mind, but it's what got me into the character.
I mean, but and the thing is, too, back then, like, cause same thing for me. I would watch the Batman 66 and then, you know, Super Friends.
Right.
And be able to see that. Oh, that's, you know, obviously that's two different kinds of Batmans. And then, oh shit, Batman popped up in Scooby-Doo.
Right.
Cool.
Yeah. Love
it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And then, you know, then it's the, you know, it's the '80s and then we've got Burton's Batman. I still love Batman. You know what I mean? It's all sure. still the same dude with the pointy ears.
Yep.
So yeah, it just, and I was growing up and it was, you know, and then Batman, the animated series. And I followed that through. That was like, it's just Batman has been a beat in almost every like decade of my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and now he'll be back, thankfully. So it was, speaking of Marvel, we did finally get a trailer for Eternals, right? Which is the, the movie for now. She was nominated, right? For did she win the Oscar for Best Picture?
She won the Oscar.
She won the Oscar for Best Picture. Chloe Zhao.
That's right.
So I saw the trailer, and I gotta say, it's a trailer, but I'm not gonna go too crazy about it. But it really didn't do much for me. It just was. I just kind of watched it and was like, all right, this is there. Didn't really get me excited. Didn't make me say like, oh crap, this looks terrible, but it just kind of, I watched it and I said okay and moved on with my life. So
yeah, I've watched it two or three times maybe. It's different. It's if I were any other person, I didn't know that this was a Marvel film, which is why the back end of that, well, obviously it gets started with the Marvel Studios logo. But at the end, if you skip that at the end, like, you got to throw in the references to, like, you know, Captain America, Iron Man, stuff like that, and remind everyone, hey, yep, this is still part of the same universe. I was like, oh, this is so, so different. And I know absolutely next to nothing about any of these characters.
Right.
Their importance. Thank you, Ryan Airy, for your videos, because he gave some in-depth schooling on who they are and why they're important and potential ways that they're going to tie into the broader MCU. Look, in Marvel I trust. So, you know, it looks like a gorgeous film.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all all I can take from it.
I'm probably not even going to be paying too much attention to, like, I don't want to know a lot about these characters going into this movie, because I actually want the movie to tell me that story.
Yeah.
You know, and I've learned my lesson, you know, with Marvel, where it's like, I don't care what their characters are in the comics or how they tie in seemingly. I want Marvel to tell me this story, and I want them to tell me the story in the context of where these characters are going.
Where they think in the
context of this universe, because it could be very different. And so I'd rather not go in with any expectations at all. I've done a really good job for my entire life of not knowing anything about these characters. So I'm going to just stick it out for another.
Dive in, right?
Yeah, I'm going to stick it out for another few months and just let the movie hopefully tell me the story. I mean, if it doesn't, that's a different issue. But
it's interesting, because I feel like, you know, we all know Thor, we know Spider-Man, we know Captain America, we know, I mean, you know, we were talking about, you know, B characters like Iron Man and them having to kind of make him an A-lister. But like, Shang-Chi.
Yep.
The Eternals. You know, some of the other stuff they have in the cut are like D characters.
Well,
you know, I mean, I'm sure they're beloved by other people. Like Guardians of the Galaxy, I don't, you know, who am I? I don't know. Maybe they were A or B characters, but I knew next to nothing about any of those things or who they were or their importance. I was pleasantly surprised that I liked them and I thought that they were intriguing characters to understand. I hope the same sort of experience happens here with the Eternals. I agree with you 100%. Like, you know, going in as almost as clean as possible into this thing, and hopefully they tell us a really cool story.
Yeah,
I've heard that from people in the know that like they expect, like, Marvel's really happy with this film and think it's going to be like a true standout for them. Like, that's mm-hmm. great. Like, if you're patting yourself on the back, like, that doesn't actually pay you. Like, you know, you got to hope general audiences gravitate towards that. I don't know if that film or what we saw on the trailer is that, other than it just being a teaser. But I'm going to tell you one thing. I'm glad I bought that number one issue. Watch that book.
Yeah, I mean, that's different. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's interesting because Marvel's in this phase now where it's not quite like phase one, because even though phase one didn't have like the super A-list characters, at least people had like kind of heard of Iron Man and Captain America. And the Hulk people knew, obviously, and even Thor. But they're in a phase now again where, like, you know, obviously the Iron Man that everybody knew and loved is no longer a thing, right?
Yeah.
And seemingly neither is Captain America, right? Although who knows? I mean, well, now we have a new Captain America. So it's like the one thing that they're not going to be able to do in the movies that they were able to do in the comics is that you could always go back to those characters, right? Meaning, and I'm not talking about the character like Iron Man. I'm talking about Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark, right? The Tony Stark that you know and love, right? You just can't. So they are going to have to evolve. And unfortunately, with the passing of Chadwick Boseman, like, that's a character that was probably going to anchor going forward. And that's obviously not going to be a thing now. And you don't know how much longer, like, Spider-Man is going to be around, at least in this form, right? And so, like, they're in a transitional phase right now, and they're going to have to, you know, people are going to, but I think people do trust Marvel to give these movies a chance and give these characters a chance. And, you know, they're going to have to, hopefully they turn out good, and hopefully people turn out for them, because it's going to be characters like this that are going to start to, they're going to have to rely on more. You know, you know, because now you're going to be, you're into your Doctor Stranges and your Ant-Mans and your, you know, hopefully your Shang-Chi's and your, you know, all of that stuff. And you got a new, you know, your new Captain America, and you got, you know, Wanda, Scarlet Witch, and whatever that's going to turn out to be and all that stuff. I mean, yeah, they still have Fantastic Four on the horizon. So that brings in another A-list group.
Mm-hmm.
And they do have the X-Men card that they can play at any time. So there's your other A-list group. So it's like, but hey, listen, if they can establish some of these on their own, and then kind of like what they did with Spider-Man, right? You establish this amazingly successful universe without any of your A-listers, and then you bring in the A-lister. Like, once everything is already established, you could do the same thing again here. You know, you establish these characters, the Eternals and Shang-Chi and you know, more Doctor Strange and, you know, and all that stuff. And then you can hit people with X-Men if you want.
Yeah.
And Fantastic. Well, they're going to hit us with Fantastic Four, but like, bring them into something that's already established. It's like, man, that's a winning formula.
Yeah. They're in a tricky spot, I'd say, because Marvel, you know, like, Guardians of the Galaxy was kind of mixed in with, you know, again, well-known characters to a degree. But a lot of this stuff now is like, and I see, I'm being sort of myopic in this, because like, Shang-Chi may be like a wildly popular character for some folks, but like, in my spectrum, in my world, like, I don't know anything about Shang-Chi.
No, yeah. I mean, look at it. Like, there's always going to be somebody that's a fan of something, right? I mean, that's different, but I like, don't think anybody's going to think it's a controversial statement to say, yeah, I didn't read Master of Kung Fu. Like, oh, sorry, you know, I don't.
Name your top Marvel characters, and people, you know, mainstream people are going to be like, Spider-Man, Captain America, the Incredible Hulk, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they're not going to be like, oh, Shang-Chi. They're like, who? So, like, yeah, they're in a place where they've got to they've got to hit it right. You know, yeah. They've got to hit it strong, and they've got to hit it right, because...
Well, I mean, they do and they don't. I mean, because, I mean, look, at the end of the day, if these movies don't... And they're also in a good spot, too, though, because these movies are coming out in a lot of ways at a perfect time. Yeah. Because if these movies had come out during a time of oversaturation... Then maybe
from a Marvel, well, I mean, this is kind of like overset. Yeah.
Well, no, not because you haven't had these movies. People haven't been to the movies in a year. Of Marvel, yeah, I'm just talking about like the fact that this may actually is a perfect time to introduce people to these characters, because they're going to be looking for that escapism, right? They're going to be looking to get back to the theaters and just enjoy themselves. So they might be more forgiving of something like that than they would have, like, if, you know, they were just cranking out movie after movie after movie. You know, and they also have the luxury now of the Disney Plus stuff, too, to fill in the gaps and expand on the universe and introduce characters and stuff like that. So, and I think that helps them with this. And they do have some, you know, again, they have aces up their sleeves if they need. You know, you have the X-Men. You even have characters like Daredevil, right? Which is a big character that you could incorporate into this somehow if you need it. So, yeah.
Yeah. We'll see. I'm hopeful. I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll be fine. Looks like I said, looks beautiful. Looks like a great epic film.
Yeah, I mean it certainly from the imagery.
The scope of it just looks massive. It looks like really cool. So
yeah.
I'll check it out. Of course.
Oh yeah. Marvel. Obviously. Sure. In theaters.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm still toying with that. I mean, we've got, you know, Black Widow dropping in a month or so.
Right.
I don't know. I'll see. I'll see.
You know, it's funny, like, probably maybe a month ago, maybe even less than that, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go see, absolutely going to see Black Widow in theaters. Like, I'm ready. I want to get out, get back to some normalcy, do that. Now, though... I just feel like I'm back to like, no, I'll watch it at home.
Yeah.
And it's like, not because I'm afraid to go to a theater or anything like that. It's nothing to do with that. I'm finding it hard to get excited about that movie. And I've had this issue since the very beginning. Like, I just have not been super excited about Black Widow.
Yeah.
It could be great and I could love it, but I'm just, as far as my hype level goes, like, I'm just... I think when push comes to shove, like, I might just want to watch it at home, you know?
Yeah. I get it. I mean, I've said it from the beginning. It's like, it's kind of hard to do stories when you know the characters sort of end. And that nothing that happens. I mean, not. That
well, I mean,
nothing,
I think they're going to lead to it. Will
they're
lead
gonna,
to things.
They're going
to
spin it off somehow, right?
Yeah.
But like you know what I'm saying.
I get it.
When you go to see a Black Widow film, you go to see Natasha. You go to see Scarlett Johansson play Natasha Romanoff.
Right.
You're not. You know, it's going to be great that they're going to drop. Like, as I've been saying, they're going to throw birdseed all over the place. See a whole bunch of new stuff. That's great. But like, you know. We know how this ends for her. So is this really, you know, doesn't really matter?
Well, this is your old argument, right?
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, about these types of things. It's like, you know how it ends for the character. I think it's going to really, the greater purpose, I think, of this movie is to establish like a new Black Widow or new characters. And obviously the Julia Louis-Dreyfus character that we met briefly and is going to play a role in this. So like, they're going to expand on her role and stuff like that. So I think it's going to be more of like expanding on the universe. Yes, it'll have a story, but yeah, I maybe that's my issue, is the fact that I think the story of the movie to me isn't as important as what it means to the universe, like the MCU, because I just feel like, who cares? Like, I feel like the story is almost going to be like something to advance the plot to get us to have a beginning, middle, and end to this movie. But you're right. Like, the character, we know how her character ends. So I care more about, like, what it's going to lead to. than I do about, as far as like for the rest of the characters and the rest of the universe.
And
I do
not, about then that's the, not how it's supposed to be. Because if any of that misses the mark, then it's like
I'm just not as invested. I'm not invested in Black Widow, in the, you know, Natasha Black Widow character, because I watched her die.
Yeah. Unless Loki has something to do.
It could be. I mean, well, again, there's the intrigue.
There's always some interesting
yes.
imagery that's been popping up from Loki trailers, and it looks like Natasha's in it. I don't know.
Who knows?
Again, I'm trying not even to get myself there because Mephisto, right?
Yes, exactly.
So, anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyways, Loki drops, what, in like 2 weeks? Week and a half?
It's like a week and a half, right?
Soon.
June 9th. Well, I guess 2 weeks, technically.
It's June 9th, I'm stoked for Loki. I don't know why, but Loki's got me really excited.
I mean, I know why. It's a great character. It's a great actor, right? He's going to have a show. So I think this one is 6 episodes too, right? He's going to have plenty of room to just kind of embrace this. This is his story, right? So it's not something that we've gotten, you know, in movies before. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. And again, I'm hoping female Loki pops up. Looks like she is. Got her first appearance too.
Oh, so you see, this has become like a commodities thing for you.
You have no idea. I've been like snatching up books because I'm like, wait, first female Loki? Okay, yeah, let me get that book. Oh, the first appearance of Owen Wilson's character in comic book. Got that. Yeah. Snatching them up. Watch, these people suck. And then it's like,
So Aaron now is going to judge his Marvel shows and films based on how many characters it introduces.
That's right.
That he has number one issues for, first appearances for.
That's right.
So you're going to be very angry if like there's a surprise thrown in, right, in any of these, and you're like, damn, I wasn't ready.
Well, you know what? It was funny because we were, I was watching Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and Isaiah Bradley pops up, and I'm like, I got to get the first appearance of Isaiah Bradley.
Too late, right?
Yeah, it was too late. And then it was like, well, what's the point of that?
Yeah.
Good story.
Well, and that was kind of a, I don't want to say big, but that was a, that was like a known storyline at the time.
Yeah.
So it's not like that was like some obscure, like random issue, like where they popped up. It's like, well, you know, who the hell would have that unless you were buying every issue every week, right? Like nobody had that. Like that was kind of a big deal when that storyline came out. So it's probably not as rare, but.
Yeah, I'll tell you the one book, and then we can cut out of here. But the one book that I grabbed before, you know, it became, this character has become like wildly popular, and I'm surprised at how, because I just checked the value of this book today. But like the first appearance of Miles Morales in Ultimate Fallout 4, I grabbed for like $30.
Okay.
And
when was this?
What?
When did you grab this for $30?
I grabbed it when I heard about Into the Spider-Verse.
Okay.
Like I was like, let me get that book because I think this is gonna be an awesome movie. So I grabbed that book again, $30, first issue, first run. Had it graded, pressed, so it's like I have a 9.6 graded book, which is pretty good. That book is going for like close to $1,300 right now.
Oh my god.
Yeah. And I'm not selling it because I just expect it to keep on going up.
Yeah, right. I mean, I fully expect that he's going to get a live action, you know, movie.
Not only that, but he's got the second Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
Like, but that, but, and he is an icon. I mean, he is a culturally iconic, like, character. And his, like, just the awareness around that character is skyrocketed. I'm so happy I grabbed that book for $30. I mean, all in, like, the press and the grading, maybe I spent like $150 all in.
Sure.
$1,300? What? Now? $1,300 now? Man, I'm going to hold that book till I'm like old and gray.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And then it will be worth nothing.
Right. Yeah. You know? I mean, there's probably going to be a moment where you should probably unload it, you know, in the next couple of years. But that's pretty good so far.
I want to unload it. So Brian Michael Bendis has not been doing signings recently.
Uh-huh.
I need him to sign that book.
Okay, so Brian Michael Bendis, if you're listening to this right now,
listen.
Aaron, you can find Aaron at A_A_ Ron Speaks. Just hit him up, slide into the DMs, and just set up a day. He needs you to sign this book.
Yes, and if not him, then Sarah Polici.
There you go.
Please sign my book. I should have gotten you signing my book like 4 years ago at New York Comic Con. I've totally taken this podcast off the rails.
That's all right. The adventures of Aaron Varola and his search for Marvel commodities.
That's right. Get at me if you guys are interested in purchasing. I hope you got $1,300.
Or more. Yeah.
I'm not selling it.
He's not selling it.
Not yet. I'll be selling some other stuff though. We'll talk.
All right. There you go.
We'll cut out here. Of course, we miss Vanana. She'll be back soon. But all right, let's get out of here.
Yeah. All right. So, of course, you can go to thefanboygarage.com. You can find us on the social media, the Facebook, the Instagram, the Twitter, at the Fanboy Garage. Check out some of our video episodes. This one won't be video, but check out some of the old ones on the YouTube channel, Fanboy Garage Podcast, and all that good stuff. And so I'm on Twitter at Real C Almighty.
You can find me on Twitter at A Ron Speaks. That is A_A_ Ron. Ron Speaks. Thank you again for listening to episode 140 of the Fanboy Garage. We are happy to be back. We're happy that you're listening. Let us know if you have any questions. If you want to keep the conversation going, you know how to keep up with us. But we'll check you guys on the next one.
You're listening to the Fanboy Garage Podcast.